Well, if you know me at all, you know I'm a longstanding fan of The Andy Griffith Show, and anybody who watched the show knows that so much of its success hinged on the on-screen relationship between Andy Griffith and Don Knotts, who played Sheriff Andy Taylor and his trusty deputy, Barney Fife. Turns out the two were big friends off the set as well. Daniel DeVisay has written a new book on the duo, Andy and Don, The Making of a Friendship and a Classic American TV Show. Daniel is a veteran of the Washington Post, the Miami Herald, and three other newspapers, and he's something else, the one-time brother-in-law of Don Knotts. And Dan, I'm sorry, I knew I was going to butcher the name. Welcome to the show. It's nice to have you nonetheless.
Hey, it's great to be talking to you. Thank you for having me.
Well, so tell us a little more about your relationship with Don Knotts, Dan, and how you're connected to the family.
Well, I first met him at Disney World, and it was probably around 1991. We were living in South Florida, and he and Francie were a couple, and they went back as far as I went back with my wife, Sophie, who's Francie's sister. So they'd been a couple for a few years by then. And we went and met with them as their guests. Don was a VIP visitor. I think he led the parade. Talk about parade. He led the parade that day. We got a backstage tour, which was an eye-opener. And everywhere he went, he was mobbed. I mean, he was like Elvis. And,
wow.
And this was cross-generational. You know, someone's grandparent might say, oh, it's the nervous man from Steve Allen. And then the mom or dad might say, oh, gosh, it's, you know, it's Barney Fife. And then the kid might say, oh, it's Mr. Limpet, you know. It was amazing. I mean, being in his company, I felt really special that day.
Well, the fact that you were tied to the family, you are tied to the family, did that make Don Knotts tougher to write about in this book or easier, or maybe both?
Well, I always wanted to write something about him. I just never really had the chance. I was busy, you know, working in newsrooms for all these years. And a couple of years ago, I finally had a chance to actually do something and do it right. And I don't know, I went into it with enormous fondness for him, enormous admiration for his career, and great fondness for his family. But I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think you can be a journalist and be objective while still feeling great admiration and respect for your subjects, and I certainly do.
As a family member, you had some access to some awfully good material, Dan. What did you get a hold of?
Well, from Don's side, I was very fortunate to be able to speak to his former wives, both of them, as well as Francie, his widow, and his children, who are wonderful, Karen and Tom.
Mm-hmm.
His manager, Sherwin, who's terrific, and pretty much almost the same degree of success in interviewing people on Andy's side. And, of course, I didn't really have the connection there, but I just played the reporter and just was dogged and determined to reach these people and made a very passionate case for why they should talk to me, and almost all of them did.
And the case was what, Dan?
Well, I wanted to do a literary work, recognizing the enormous achievements of these two men as entertainers. And a lot of great stuff has been written about the Griffith Show, but I wanted to write about the men and what brilliant, innovative, creative performers they were. And I wanted to celebrate them sort of in a literary fashion, write something that I hoped would be up to the level of quality that they gave us in all of their many roles.
Did you and Don spend much time talking about the show and Andy when you would get together at family functions, Dan, or how did that play out?
Yeah, well, he'd be, I think I described this in the book, he'd be the guy kind of sitting in the corner minding his own, but he was a little bit reticent, but just a delightful human being. And I'd walk over and start engaging with him because I'm a reporter, right? So I would say, tell me about the nervous guy again. You know, he loved telling stories, especially about the early years of his career and breaking into radio and doing Windy Wales, the old timer on the Bobby Benson show, and all these crazy things he went through. And even back in, you know, being in the army and being terrified, you know, you know, in the jungle. But we talked most about kind of the decisions that made him famous, and the biggest of those decisions certainly was calling Andy and saying, hey, do you need a deputy? And
yes,
that's been termed the most important telephone call in the history of television. I don't think that's an overstatement. And then I'd put second on that list his decision to introduce the nervous man character, which he parlayed into a regular role on the Steve Allen show. And that was a huge deal in the 1950s. That's kind of like being like on Letterman more recently, a similar demographic to like hip college kids would tune in and watch that show, and he was brilliant on it. And he dreamed up that character. It was his first sort of original creation.
Daniel Devesay is my guest. His new book, Andy and Don, The Making of a Friendship and a Classic American TV Show. So at the end of the day then, Dan, how would you describe the relationship between Andy Griffith and Don Knox? How close were they?
Well, think of somebody from college or from high school, from the best years of our lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody you spent an enormous amount of time with during a formative period. And then over the years and even the decades since then, you might drift apart in the sense of not seeing each other all the time, in the sense of not being at every gathering. But your friendship remains powerful, not just there, but powerful. And when you do see each other, it's a joyous occasion. You fall right back into the friendship. That's the starting point for understanding their friendship. Their friendship began on Broadway in the 50s, and it was a very intense bond during a very intense time. They were playing on Broadway every night, and Don had a small part, and Andy was the star. But
yes,
that wasn't the way their friendship was. Their friendship was as equals, and they were Southerners sort of thrown together into this Broadway milieu. And then, sorry to go on here, but then in the Griffith Show, it was the same thing, day in, day out, week in, week out. They were with each other constantly, every day, all day, and these were their best, happiest years. Almost without parallel. So it was a really, really intense friendship. By the end of that time when Don left the show, they were as close can be. And I don't think it mattered how much they talked or often they saw each other after that, because they were so, so close.
These were men, Dan, who had similar backgrounds in so many ways. Tell us about that.
Well, that's right. Don was from Morgantown, West Virginia, which is not a small town, but it was a very small city. And Andy was from Mount Airy, North Carolina, which was a legitimately small place.
Yeah.
And the similarities are too many to list in a brief interview, but where do you begin? I mean, they both slept on sort of like cots. I think Andy's first bed was a bureau drawer, and Don's was something rigged up in the kitchen. They were both from fairly poor families. Andy might have lived a little better because he was the only child, so the income was distributed fewer ways.
Yeah.
But they both had, I would say, a hard scrabble upbringing, and each of them had a lot of trauma. In Andy's case, and maybe not so many people know this, but he was bullied pretty relentlessly, and he felt a deep, deep sense of insecurity at being from the wrong side of the tracks.
Hmm.
In Don's case, he had a mentally ill father who would sometimes be violent and was sometimes institutionalized and would sometimes come after him with a knife.
And all this just makes their art all the greater, given what they had to overcome.
And then once they started spending time together, they realized that beyond that, those are dark things. They had a lot of warm, happy memories as well of sort of lazy evenings on the porch with relatives talking about maybe we'll go into town and get a bottle of pop, and the barber character downtown who
Floyd.
Would give you a haircut if you waited till the end of the day, give it to you free. And they shared these stories, just dozens and hundreds of them, and many of them wound up in the show. It's worth noting that Maybury is not a dark place, so a lot of the darker memories they had, and they had many, were sweetened for television, but the essence of them remains.
Well, if you're just joining us again, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking this morning about the Andy Griffith Show, and we're talking about it because I'm such a huge fan. And it's such a great kick to talk to Daniel Devesay about his new book, Andy and Don, The Making of a Friendship and a Classic American TV Show. So Andy was the budding star coming out of the 1950s. How did the Andy Griffith Show come to be?
Yeah, Andy was a star. He started out down south. He had a hit record, sort of for the Mad Magazine set, if you will. What it was football. It sold about 1 million copies, which is a big deal. And he was sort of discovered, and he went up to New York, and he talked his way into the lead role in No Time for Sergeants, which was sort of a trifecta. It was a television production, and then it was a stage play, which was a hit. And then it was a movie, and it was a hit movie. Now, really, that was the substance of his fame by the time Griffith show rolled around, he had this brilliant, brilliant performance he put in for Ilia Kazan in A Face in the Crowd, which
yes.
is acknowledged as a classic now. But not a whole lot of people went and saw that movie, and I think fewer still understood it or understood how great Andy was in it until decades later. So at the time the Griffith Show was born, he was basically the guy from No Time for Sergeants. And I believe that Sheldon Leonard's genius as the sort of executive producer was to dream up a part for Andy. The idea is we're going to make a show for Andy. Well, what kind of show is it going to be? I think Sheldon took one look at this guy and said, well, he's a sort of warm, folksy, fatherly Southern guy, so it's going to be a warm, folksy, fatherly Southern show. And it was the way Sheldon sort of modestly described it, it was as simple as that. And that was his sort of particular brilliance. And it didn't take much for him to convince Andy to do it. Andy felt like he was at the end of his rope at that time because he'd done a second play which wasn't as big as the first. He'd done a third movie which wasn't as big as either of the first two. And I think he felt at that point like, boy, television is about my last option here. And fortunately, it sort of worked out for him.
Well, you've already alluded to this notion, and this will surprise people, that Don Knotts was not part of the original image for the Andy Griffith Show. And in fact, as you mentioned, he reached out to Andy Griffith and said, hey, I think you need a deputy. How did Andy react to that, Dan?
Yeah, the pilot aired on the Danny Thomas Show, which was a huge show in the 50s. And it was titled Danny Meets Andy Griffith. And a lot of the elements of the Griffith Show are there, but a lot of them are not. There's no Aunt B. That actress plays a widow who comes to Andy for help with something or other. There's no deputy. There's a town drunk, but he's not Otis. On and on. So you go watch this on YouTube, and it's kind of surreal.
Mm.
Anyway, Don watched that pilot from the home of Schneider the Handyman, that actor. And because they were friends, they played bridge.
Uh-huh.
And he called Andy, I guess, the next day and said, well, Andy, you know, she's the deputy. I try to reconstruct that moment when Andy's mulling what to do. My guess is, and this is just a guess, is that Andy probably immediately grasped that it would be a great decision. And remember, I have to tell you, though, you probably might not know this, but Andy had a little bit of apprehension about this show because he was afraid it would be sort of a bumpkin role, kind of a one-dimensional sort of pratfallish sort of role. He was a little worried that everything was going to have to revolve around his sort of antics and that he'd have to be kind of a one-dimensional Southern Rube, and he didn't want to do that. And my guess is, because this is a brilliant man, he immediately grasped that introducing Don to the show would give him somebody to play off of, would allow him to play with a bit more dignity as sort of a straight man to Don's kind of manic crazy guy.
Yeah.
And I don't guess that it would have taken Andy two ticks of the clock to figure that out. And he was immediately receptive to it. We know that he asked Don to follow up with Sheldon,
mm-hmm.
and Don did. And Sheldon, we're told that he initially thought maybe it would be a one-off role, see how it went. That was what they did with a lot of those characters. A lot of them started out as one-off casting decisions. But after they saw the dailies from the first episode, they were sold, and they signed him up.
And the whole thing clicked pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. If you watch the second episode, which is titled Manhunt,
mm-hmm.
by the time you're done watching that, you want more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You want more of those two guys.
And I've seen that show any number of times in my DVD collection at home. The show was an enormous hit. Just how big a hit was it, and how popular does it remain today, Dan?
Well, the critics didn't think much of it. It got lukewarm reviews at the start, and it got lukewarm reviews toward the end, too. Nobody in the sort of critical audience gave it much love. And it didn't win many awards either. I think the Dick Van Dyke Show won many, many more Emmys than did the Griffith Show. So remember that as a backdrop to all this.
Mm-hmm.
The public loved it. It hit the top 10 within weeks, and it stayed there for the duration of the show. And it was number one the last year it was on the air, and this is without Don. Not many shows go out literally number one in the ratings.
Yeah.
The enduring quality of it, hard to say. I watched it as a kid on reruns in Chicago, And back then, a lot of stuff from the 60s was on the air. But then you flash forward to the 80s and then to the 90s, most of those other shows went away. And the Griffith Show was still there. And then you flash forward to now, and it's still there. What is that? I think the show is timeless, and I think the show was timeless. I think it was timeless when it went on the air. It was never really set in any fixed point in time. It was
No.
always this sort of exercise in loving nostalgia for an earlier era, for a bygone time. And it was old then, and it's old now, and maybe that's why it ages so well.
Yeah. Well, Don Knotts as Deputy Barney Fife was an absolute phenom. He would win 5 Emmys during the show's run. Let's listen to a scene from the show where Deputy Barney Fife is struggling to recite the preamble to the U.S. Constitution. This is one of the most beloved scenes from the show. He's told Andy that he has the preamble down cold, but he soon begins to struggle with it. Let's listen.
Now, we had to memorize the preamble of that. I still remember.
You do?
Yeah. Here, I'll show you. Hold the book on me.
All right, go ahead.
Constitution of the United States. Just give me the first word and then I'll know the rest.
Okay, we.
We.
We?
We. Are you sure?
I'm looking right at it.
Oh, we. We!
The.
We the. We the.
People.
We the people. We the people. We the people. We the people. We the people of the united flag, breathe, wind, wave, star,
states.
We the people of the United States.
I say that's pretty timeless humor, Dan. That still works today. You know, you can't see Don Knotts contorting himself into unbelievable positions as he tries to get those words out. So Don Knotts' stature grows during the first 5 seasons of the show. How did Andy Griffith react to that?
Well, Andy was the boss of that show. It was his show. He owned part of it, and he was clearly the guy in charge. And so from that perspective, he loved it. He was so grateful that it worked out so well. And he had kind of different hats he wore. He was an actor on the show, a character on the show, but it was also sort of his show. So he was delighted, and he adored Don and loved every minute he spent with him. I describe in my book, though, that there was a healthy competition between them, I think, always. And perhaps Andy resented a bit that Don got all this artistic recognition, you know, times five, while Andy himself was fairly cruelly denied, because I think he did a brilliant job in that role, but he never was even nominated for an Emmy for it. And apparently, during the years that they were together on the show, it was just something Andy never brought up, and Don knew better than to bring it up himself. And that wouldn't have been Don's way. He wasn't that kind of guy. He was very, very modest.
Well, Barney was on the show for 5 seasons, as you mentioned, the first 5 seasons of the show's run. You also write in here that when Don's 5-year tenure with the show was over, he offered to stick around, but only if Andy would agree to share his lucrative ownership stake with Don with Don Knotts. What did Andy say to that?
Yeah, there were kind of two things going on here. I think Don wanted a stake in the show. He felt like he'd been undersold up to that point, and he was so important to the show, and certainly Andy agreed with that. I think there was also talk. I think Don was interested in having a more formal comedy partnership, you know, an artistic partnership as well. And the reaction, well, apparently that they both sort of bungled it, because I think there was a misunderstanding. Andy thought that apparently that Don wanted half of what Andy had as an ownership share on the show. That wasn't really the case, but they were not negotiators, so they almost sort of misunderstood each other. And Andy said, "No, I can't really do that." Also, Andy didn't like the idea of them having a formal like Martin and Lewis partnership. look what happened to Martin and Lewis. I think he was afraid that might happen to Andy and Don if they became partners. And so they remained the closest of friends forever after, but that was the end of their association on that show.
Well, you wonder how their relationship did survive something like that, Dan, because, you know, you start talking money, you start talking, you know, that kind of involvement, and, you know, relationships can fray pretty quickly.
Yeah, I wasn't there, and I don't know that anybody outside of the inner circle even knew this stuff. So it's hard to say. I think that if either man's manager were on the phone with us right now, Sherwin for Don or Dick Link for Andy, who's also still alive, he's 98, I think that either of those men would say that their friendship was just way too powerful to be sort of driven asunder by a little bit of business. I think both of them had really good priorities, and they knew that their friendship was more important than any of that stuff.
You know, after Don died, there was a campaign for a statue of Don in Mount Airy, North Carolina, which, as you've mentioned, is Andy's hometown and the inspiration for Mayberry. How did Andy react to that?
Andy had been sort of at odds with his hometown for many years. I told you he had sort of a class issue. He felt like he was from the wrong side of the tracks and that he didn't get a lot of love from Mount Airy. But they mended that relationship. And by the time Don died, I think Andy really treasured his place in the sort of firmament of kind of Mount Airy mythos. And so by that time, he really, really loved being sort of their favorite son. And he really didn't like the idea of having a barn, of sort of sharing the stage in his own town with Don. He kind of blew up at the idea. And this wasn't because he didn't love Don. This is more about his own feelings about his own career. Remember, this was a guy who had been passed over time and again for artistic recognition.
Yeah.
I think he really valued his sort of primacy in Mount Airy and wanted it to be sort of his place. You know, Don could have a statue in Morgantown, and indeed, there is a statue that's going up shortly in Morgantown that honors Don.
Yeah. Well, Daniel Devesay, again, is the author of Andy and Don, The Making of a Friendship and a Classic American TV Show. This is a great contribution to the Griffith Show pantheon of good books here. Dan, I've got most of them, and this book showed me a whole lot of things I didn't know before. Thanks for writing it. Thanks for coming on today. It was just a pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
You bet.